Critique of the Gotha Program by Karl Marx. Part 4. I come now to the democratic section. A. Quote, the free basis of the state. First of all, according to Tu, the German Workers' Party strives for, quote, the free state. Free state, what is this? It is by no means the aim of the workers, who have got rid of the narrow mentality of humble subjects, to set the state free. In the German Empire, the state is almost as free as in Russia. Freedom consists in converting the state from an organ superimposed upon society into one completely subordinate to it. And today, too, the forms of state are more or less free to the extent that they restrict the, quote, freedom of the state. The German Workers' Party, at least if it adopts the program, shows that its socialist ideas are not even skin deep, in that, instead of treating existing society, and this holds good for any future one, as the basis of the existing state, or of the future state in the case of future society, it treats the state, rather, as an independent entity that possesses its own intellectual, ethical, and libertarian bases. And what of the riotous misuse which the program makes of the words present-day state, present-day society, and of the still more riotous misconception it creates in regard to the state to which it addresses its demands? Present-day society is capitalist society, which exists in all civilized countries, more or less free from medieval admixture, more or less modified by the particular historical development of each country more or less developed. On the other hand, the present-day state changes with the country's frontier. It is different in the Prusso-German Empire from what it is in Switzerland, and different in England from what it is in the United States. The present-day state is therefore a fiction. Nevertheless, the different states of the different civilized countries, in spite of their more motley diversity of form, all have this in common, that they are based on modern bourgeois society, only one more or less capitalistically developed. They have, therefore, also certain essential characteristics in common. In this sense, it is impossible to speak of the present-day state, in contrast with the future, in which its present root, bourgeois society, will have died off. The question then arises, what transformation will the state undergo in communist society? In other words, what social functions will remain in existence there that are analogous to present-day state functions? This question can only be answered scientifically, and one does not get a flea-hopping ear to the problem by a thousandfold combination of the word people with the word state. Between capitalist and communist society, there lies the period of the revolutionary transformation of the one into the other. Corresponding to this is also a political transition period, in which the state can be nothing but the revolutionary dictatorship of the proletariat. Now, the program does not deal with this, nor with this, the future state of communist society. Its political demands contain nothing beyond the old democratic litany familiar to all: universal suffrage, direct legislation, popular rights, a people's militia, etc. They are a mere echo of the Bourgeois People's Party, of the League of Peace and Freedom. They are all demands which, insofar as they are not exaggerated in fantastic presentation, have already been realized. Only the state to which they belong does not lie within the borders of the German Empire, but in Switzerland, the United States, etc. This sort of state of the future is a present-day state, although existing outside the framework of the German Empire. But one thing has been forgotten. Since the German Workers' Party expressly declares that it acts within the present-day national state, hence within its own state, the Prusso-German Empire, its demands would indeed be otherwise largely meaningless, since one only demands what one has not got. It should not have forgotten the chief thing, namely, that all those pretty little gewgaws rest on the recognition of the so-called sovereignty of the people, and hence are appropriate only in a democratic republic. Since one has not the courage, and wisely so, for the circumstances demand caution, to demand the democratic republic, as the French workers' programs did under Louis Philippe and under Louis Napoleon did, one should not have resorted either to the subterfuge, neither, quote, honest nor decent, of demanding things which have meaning only in a democratic republic from a state which is nothing but a police-guarded military despotism, embellished with parliamentary forms, alloyed with a feudal admixture, already influenced by the bourgeoisie and bureaucratically carpentered, and then to assure this state into the bargain that one imagines one will be able to force such things upon it by legal means. Even vulgar democracy, which sees the millennium in the Democratic Republic, and has no suspicion that it is precisely in this last form of state of bourgeois society that the class struggle has to be fought out to a conclusion, even it towers mountains above this kind of democratism, which keeps within the limits of what is permitted by the police and not permitted by logic. That, in fact, by the word state, is meant the government machine, or the state insofar as it forms a special organism separated from society through division of labor, is shown by the words, quote, the German Workers' Party demands as the economic basis of the state a single progressive income tax, end quote, etc. Taxes are the economic basis of the government machinery, and of nothing else. In the state of the future, existing in Switzerland, this demand has pretty well fulfilled. Income tax presupposes various sources of income of the various social classes, and hence capitalist society. It is, therefore, nothing remarkable that the Liverpool financial reformers, bourgeois, headed by Gladstone's brother, are putting forward the same demand as the program. B. Quote, the German Workers' Party demands as the intellectual and ethical basis of the state, 1. Universal and equal elementary education by the state, universal compulsory school attendance, free instruction. End quote. Equal elementary education? What idea lies behind these words? Is it believed that in present-day society, and it is only with this one has to deal, education can be equal for all classes? Or is it demanded that the upper classes also shall be compulsorily reduced to the modicum of education, the elementary school, that alone is compatible with the economic conditions, not only of the wage workers, but of the peasants as well. Quote, universal compulsory school attendance, free instruction, end quote. The former exists even in Germany, the second in Switzerland, and in the United States in the case of elementary schools. If in some states of the latter country, higher education institutions are also, quote, free, that only means, in fact, defraying the cost of education of the upper classes from the general tax receipts. Incidentally, the same holds good for, quote, free administration of justice, demanded under A.5. The administration of criminal justice is to be had free everywhere. That of civil justice is concerned almost exclusively with conflicts over property, and hence affects almost exclusively the possessing classes. Are they to carry on their litigation at the expense of the national coffers? This paragraph on the schools should at least have demanded technical schools, theoretical and practical, in combination with the elementary school. Elementary education by the state is altogether objectionable. Defining by a general law the expenditures on the elementary schools, the qualifications of the teaching staff, the branches of instruction, etc., and, as is done in the United States, supervising the fulfillment of these legal specifications by state inspectors, is a very different thing from appointing the state as the educator of the people. Government and church should rather be equally excluded from any influence on the school. Particularly, indeed, in the Prusso-German Empire, and one should not take refuge in the rotten subterfuge that one is speaking of a state of the future. We have seen how matters stand in this respect. The state has need, on the contrary, of a very stern education by the people. But the whole program, for all its democratic clang, is tainted through and through by the LaSallian sect's servile belief in the state, or, what is no better, by a democratic belief in miracles. Or rather, it is a compromise between these two kinds of belief in miracles, both equally remote from socialism. Freedom of science, says paragraph on the Prussian Constitution. Why then here? Freedom of conscience. If one desired, at this time of the Kulturkampf, to remind liberalism of its old catchwords, it surely could have been done only in the following form. Everyone should be able to attend his religious as well as his bodily needs without the police sticking their noses in. But the Workers' Party ought, at any rate in this connection, to have expressed its awareness of the fact that the bourgeois freedom of conscience is nothing but the toleration of all possible kinds of religious freedom of conscience, and that for its part it endeavors rather to liberate the conscience from the witchery of religion. But one chooses not to transgress the bourgeois level. I have now come to the end. For the appendix that now follows in the program does not constitute a characteristic component part of it. Hence, I can be very brief. End of section. End of critique of the Gotha program.